Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, and a man who has conclusively proved that Son and Perisic can play together in the same team. It's fine. It's Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Well, I mean, theoretically they could. They don't. But that's not a direct fault between those two players, in my opinion. I mean, at the moment, like, since making that video, it looks like Perisic can't play football at all. So, great timing on that one, mate. Thanks.
Yeah, I finally got around to watching the video that Nathan made like a fortnight ago. It's extremely good.
Thank you.
A very good piece of analysis. I don't want to spoil too much. It's very thorough. It goes back to last season's Son. In fact, it reminded me of how much I was frustrated watching Son's back-to-goal play last season as well. It's just that last season, he actually got chances through balls. That's the only difference, isn't it?
That's, in my opinion, that is the difference between this season and last season's Son.
Yeah, he was just as frustrating in his general play.
This is not the podcast for it, right? But last season we got pushback because we criticised Son in games where he scored. Let's move on. No one cares about this.
But great video is what I'm saying. We've had so many emails and messages and tweets over the past 3-4 days. So I want to say a few thank yous to the following for emails. Ivan Victor, Alec Depkrinsky, Tobias Howlett, Abdul Akani, James Sullivan, Rob Kleinite, Doug Felagy, Harry Hantel, Jeff Nelson, Paul Maslin, Daryl Brugink, and we got another one actually just now. Let me give him a shout out as well. Tucker Dietrich. Thank you all. Some very thought-provoking emails, some very long emails, some very frustrated emails. There's a lot to talk about Spurs at the moment. We are being written about by all of the major football writers, some of whom clearly are not paying much attention to the actual goings-on at Tottenham, I think it's fair to say. I think Dan Kilpatrick wrote a really good piece today, which I thought was very well balanced. I enjoyed that. I also thought Miguel Delaney's article was really good. It felt like he'd actually asked some Spurs fans about things rather than, you know, some of the writing I've seen about Spurs recently is just dog shit. But we'll start off with the Southampton game and we'll go from there because I do think it's our thing to talk about the matches and analyse them to some degree. Do not worry. We are going to talk about that press conference. It's going to happen. It's going to happen a little later. We'll start off with the lineup, and I guess Conte was undermined quite early on in the game. He started with Richarlison had to come off injured after a handful of minutes, but there's a talking point there as well. Aside from the pick of Richarlison over Kulusevski, I don't think there were many surprises in the lineup. Davis was once again starting left wing back. Pedro Porro started on the right. Bardi, were you surprised at all by Emerson Royale's benching?
No, not really. Porro played well against Forest. I thought the team, it wasn't surprising. Yeah, there was nothing. I don't think there was anything really to tell. It doesn't really surprise anybody with his selections, does he really, Conte?
No.
It's the same kind of thing every week.
Yeah, and what did you make of the selection of Richarlison, knowing now that he'd gone down injured in the warm-up?
I don't know. I mean, he gave him a go. He played quite well against Forest. He offers us something different. We got 5 substitutes. I don't think we would have I don't think we expected to get 2 injuries in the first half, which then kind of screwed up how many subs we could do in the second half. I think it was a fair enough gamble with 5 subs, especially when he's so reluctant to make subs. It was all right to try it.
I kind of wonder if he said to Richarlison, are you okay to play? And Richarlison said yes. And personally, I don't think that should ever be a conversation that happens. I think it should be left up to medical professionals.
There's loads.
Even when you're a medical professional, it's still hard to work around what a player is saying when a player says they feel fine.
Yeah.
It's not concussion. As far as I'm aware, it wasn't a concussion. It was a muscular injury. And there's only so much the medical staff can do on that.
Can you put weight on it? Does it feel fine? Can you stretch it out? Mm-hmm. And if Richarlison says yes, and he does a good job of grimacing through the pain or hiding his grimace through the pain or whatever, it's very hard. You know, you can't take him for a scan after the warm-up and you can't make a conclusive call from that anyway. So,
I mean, I just have so little faith in Spurs' ability to ensure the safety of the players after watching All or Nothing.
Sure, I get that. I get that. My frustration, yeah. Sorry, buddy. My frustration is like irrelevant to the injury. Is playing Richarlison and signing Kane in the front three is its own issue, and it worked out fine against Forest, who I thought were terrible. And I obviously wasn't surprised to see Conte stick, but I felt like it was going to come to bite us. It didn't because of Richarlison's injury. Other things did instead, right?
Yeah. Buddy, were you going to say something? Sorry.
Yeah, I just mean there's plenty we're going to spank Conte with right now. I think trying Richarlison, who might be carrying an injury from the start, he gets a pass on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm more critical of club policy and also Richarlison in that instance, to be honest. He was in tears. He looked really like this seems to be a serious injury. Otherwise, I don't think he would have been in tears. And I kind of like, I want to shake him and say that if you know you've got something that potentially that serious going on, why do you think you can run it off? But then, you know, I've tried to run off injuries before because you get that little adrenaline burst, don't you? And you think everything's fine. You don't feel the pain initially and then you make it worse and whatever. Anyway, I don't know why I'm going on about this. this game was interesting. So we're playing bottom of the table Southampton, who are bottom of the table in points, but not quite in expected points. They're a little higher. Okay. Not by loads, but a bit higher. They've been underperforming their expected goals this season. Hadn't scored 3 goals in a match all season. Hadn't scored many goals at all this season. Obviously, moved on from Nathan Jones relatively recently. Have got a caretaker manager who's been at the club since being assistant to Ralf Hasenhüttl. They themselves had 2 injuries early in the game. They lost both of their centre-backs, which obviously isn't ideal. We lost Richarlison and Ben Davis. I don't know how you guys felt, but to me there was something early on in this game, and I thought there were periods of the game, by the way, that we were okay, or not, wasn't blown away, but I thought we were fine. I just was cringing watching bottom of the table Southampton knock the ball around quite confidently and, you know, having a lot of the ball in our half, popping balls into Che Adams, who was dropping off into space, players on rushing beyond him, fullbacks really heavily involved, particularly Kyle Walker-Peters, who I thought was really good. They're just playing like progressive, enjoyable football whilst we just plodded along knocking balls across the back line, as we do. I found it really like, for a moment, I was like, oh, yeah, that's why I hate this version of Tottenham, because it's this. And the bottom of the table side are playing in a much more sort of fluent, enjoyable way. It kind of, to me, it was like, it crystallised a lot of the way I feel about Spurs right now. And I would have felt this way even if we'd gone on to win 3-1, which it looked like we were going to do at one point. How did you guys feel about this match?
I remember when Perisic scored the third, thinking that I would be coming on the podcast and sort of sarcastically saying, you know, tidy 3-1 win, no problem, never in doubt kind of thing at that point. So I guess in a way you could feel where it's going. In terms of letting the opposition in 20th place have a lot of the ball in the second half, especially.
Yeah.
We played Southampton first game of the season, and I remember we went ahead relatively early or whatever, and then we played on the break and we were outstanding on the break, and I came on this podcast and spoke so highly of how good we are once the game state is in our favour. Good generally, I thought at that time, because that was going on the back end of last season. But once we're ahead, we're so good on the counter, not just being efficient from the counters that we have, but more importantly, in my opinion, generating a number of counterattacks again and getting those turnovers in midfield and then being threatening from them reliably. So like, in terms of like tactical criticism of Conte, it's not to say this is not a viable tactical approach, right? It's not to say this doesn't suit our squads, which maybe there's something to, but to an overall point, we've proven this squad can do that and do it well, right? There has to be more nuance to it than just to say we shouldn't do this, but to do this and lose is always just the worst thing in the world as a fan. I hate it when it doesn't work, right? If you try and play possession football, it doesn't come off. It can be obviously painful, of course. But you try and play counter-attack football, it doesn't come off. It's miserable. It's so miserable. So if there is a tactical criticism, which I think there can be, it has to be you've seen this approach fail repeatedly and you haven't changed it up.
Right, right. And I think the context has changed now from opening day because Southampton are bottom.
And yeah, 100%.
Vardy, how did it make you feel?
The first half, I was all right with it. I thought the first half we were able to get Porro in some nice positions and I thought we were doing all right. And then, like you guys, I thought a 3-1 is going to be one of those away results where it's just like, okay, we did enough. We did what we needed to do to win and we got the 3 points. And I've arrived at a point of the season with this team and the manager's just like, I just want the points. I don't care how we get there and how they're achieved. But there was a moment where I was watching everybody behind the ball and nobody doing anything. And it's quite incredible how we could play a defensive tactic and try and be defensive, but then just be anything but defensive. And it takes some skill on the bench and on the pitch to be able to put 9 men, 10 men behind the ball and nobody is anywhere near the ball. So I think there's a lot going wrong at Tottenham, and the press conference kind of shows that there's, you know, he's lost the dressing room. Yeah, for sure. There's always that moment that's gone. Yeah, I think this is over now. And this is one of those moments which you go back and you recognize that the era is done and we have to move on from it. And this game sums it up beautifully because there was just, I hate using the word lack of desire, lack of passion, but nobody was making a tackle. No one was doing anything. Everybody's head's gone. Everybody's thinking about something else. And it's misery. It's a pure misery.
Mm-hmm. And yet we would have won the game were it not for a dodgy decision by the video assistant referee. Let's talk a little bit about that penalty call. I can't see any way in which that is a legitimate penalty. And I think I've said in this podcast many times, I think the threshold is too high for the whole clear and obvious error thing. They don't correct things enough because like the referee isn't wrong enough.
Yeah.
In this instance, I don't think that argument applies. I think the referee was clearly wrong. He thought that Sarr had gone through the back of the player and he hadn't. He'd air-kicked, essentially.
Might have brushed him.
Ultimately, there's a dive there. And I think the whole purpose of the video assistant referee should be to recognise where there's been an inherent unfairness and to correct that decision. And I thought, when I saw the replay, I thought, oh, okay, this will get cleared up. Mm. And then it didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, I not to take away from how terrible this game was before the penalty was given, but I felt like it was Maitland-Niles, wasn't it? I felt like Maitland-Niles had thrown himself in dangerously with high studs into where Sarr was possessing the ball, and therefore, if anything, he had fouled Sarr despite having his foot up earlier. I think that Maitland-Niles made a dangerous play. And as a result of his own dangerous play, he got lightly brushed on the calf by Sarr.
It did remind me of the Lamella one at Anfield.
Yeah, 100%.
Lamella saw Van Dijk was going to clear it and then put himself in the way of the clearance. But at least Lamella got whacked. He got hit.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we need to... The 3 points would have been useful, but... Is the fallout from not getting the 3 points going to be more useful for us in the long run? I don't know. And I think that's what we need to see where the club goes from here. I think us recording this on a Monday, when I think Conte's in Italy, this might be dated pretty quick because we don't know what's going to happen. But it's one of those moments that the press conference and the penalty overshadows everything else. And there were flaws in the game. I think there was a lot to take from it. I thought Porro was excellent.
Sure.
I really liked his attitude in the first half. But the second half, we started slow, man. And I don't know what it is. I really don't know how we can come out and within... Just be like that from the start. We really need to. There really needs to be an improvement. Whoever the new manager is, there is serious issues with this defense, with this team at this club. There needs to be fixes, and I don't think rejigging it is going to help. I think there's fundamental flaws in this club.
We'll definitely come back to that comment for sure. I really like this question from Doug Fellergy, who says, with the Southampton match just ending, most of the TV personalities have blamed the result on the shortcomings of individual Spurs players in individual moments. Sarr's attempt to clear that resulted in the penalty being given, Perisic losing his man and not tracking back fast enough, etc. Throughout the season, though, I've also heard blame for poor performances attributed to Conte's insistence on his preferred formation, not rotating players, and waiting too long before making substitutions. I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on how to assign responsibility for results to the player against the manager. Was today an example of the players doing their best but making errors that Conte should have foreseen? Did Conte manage well but the players switched off, or was it a combination of the two?
It's very difficult to answer this question without going to Conte's comments, right? So Conte post-match essentially put it on the individuals. He says that the I can't remember his exact wording. The players are... help me out here, please.
The club has responsibility for the transfer market. Every coach that stayed here has their responsibility, and the players were the players, in my experience. I could tell if you want to be competitive, if you want to fight, you have to improve this aspect. Is that the bit?
And this aspect, I can tell you, in this moment is really, really low. And I see only 11 players that play for themselves. Yeah.
Selfish. You called them selfish, right?
We are 11 players that go into the pitch. I see selfish players. I see players that don't want to help each other out and don't put... Sorry. I see players that don't want to help each other out and don't put their heart. Before today, I preferred to hide this situation and tried to speak to try to improve the spirit of the situation with the words, with a lot of situations, because about tactical or technical aspect, this is one situation. The most important thing, if you want to become a strong team, if you want to become a competitive, if you want to fight to win, is the desire, the fire that you need to have in your eyes, in your heart, and you have to show this in every moment.
Okay, so they lack the necessary fire and desire. They're selfish. I think that there are ways in which you can see that materialize on the pitch in our passivity defensively. The first thing on that is that not to rid the back five of individual criticism, but pressing starts from the front, right? So it's Kane and Son, Richarlison, then Kulusevski, and then our midfield two helping them out in that press. And they were super, like when we're 3-1 up, 3-2 up, super, super passive, lacking energy, Højbjerg just getting dribbled past after Kane is walked around, right? So it has to start there when we talk about individuals. But to a much larger point, right, we've seen a dramatic lack of rotation this season, last season too. So which players is he talking about, right? Is he talking about the players that he starts, in which case try other players? Or is he talking about the players he doesn't start, in which case, what's the fucking problem, right? If it's Harry Kane, say it's Harry Kane. If it's Son, say it's Son. Try a different player in Son's place because we've got three natural backups in the squad, right? If it's Eric Dier, fine. You've played Eric Dier all season. You could play Longley and Davies and Romero in the back three. You did that for a couple of games. You didn't like it. You brought Dier back in. If his position is that it is rotten through the entire squad, it's an entire squad of selfish players and he's got to pick 11 of them. It's an entire squad of a lack of desire. Surely that has to reflect on him, because we were good last season. We invested an enormous amount of money on the players that he wanted, and now the squad is selfish, has given up, has no desire, is playing terribly, has no intensity. At some point, he's got to take some level of responsibility for some of that, right?
Yeah, he does need to take responsibility, and he'll be fired because of that. But there is... I mean, I used to talk about Vertonghen when he got the hunch, and all these players when they start hunching. And Dier was similar. Like, it's really easy for a defender to drop behind the goalkeeper and protect the goal rather than step into the ball and go and claim the ball. There is an issue with the tactics, and there is an issue with the individuals, and we've just arrived at this kind of perfect place where it's all gone wrong at the same time. The players are unable just to see out a game and just win some tackles, make some fouls, and just stop Southampton. It's not Real Madrid, it's Southampton. Just stop them running through you. Take a yellow card, for fuck's sake. They didn't do that. And then it's also Conte's fault for not being able to stop that either and inspire these players to change up. So there's fault all over the place. I don't know if I imagined I'd said this or while I'm prepared to say it, but when you sack a manager, you've arrived at a point where everything has failed. Everything the club has put in position, from the hiring of the manager to the training to the tactics to the scouting, everything is an ultimate failure that belongs to the club. And I think that's what we've happened here. We've hired a manager that doesn't fit for us. We've not allowed that manager or given that manager what he demanded for various reasons. He's been unable to adapt according to what we've given him. And we've arrived here now where it's not that bad, but it's pretty bad. And it can only can only get worse. So we have to almost cut it off and start again and hope that whoever it is can bring get something out of these players that look unmotivated. And it's just their ability just to give up again for another manager that really annoys me. That's what gets me down about this.
I'd sort of take issue with your another manager comment because, other than Dyer and Davis, are we talking about Son and Kane and Lloris? You know, they've been exceptional servants for us over many years.
Has not been exceptional. Son has been very far from exceptional this season.
This season, sure. But again, I think that's tactical. I do think that's tactical, largely. If I were going to push back on Conte's comments about the players, I would really like to draw on this email from James Sullivan, which I think is really helpful. So James says, it's really important that we do not let Conte completely dissociate himself from Spurs. This side has his fingerprints all over it. Under Conte, we offered new deals to Lloris and Dyer. He was effusive in his praise of both. He said Dyer could become the best in his position in the world. When we signed Richarlison, the player confirmed that Conte called him personally to convince him. On Bissouma, Conte has said how much he has impressed us with his performances for Brighton last season. We know about his history with Perisic too. Even on centre-backs, Conte clearly said last December how we didn't need new players in that position. Speaking about Clement Longley, he said how happy the club was with our choice to sign him, you mean in Conte's team, citing the player's technical ability and personality. We constantly talk about Conte not mincing his words, so saying he was towing the company line with these quotes doesn't wash. I actually quite like the players we have signed or renewed, but they have underperformed under Conte. We cannot let Conte rewrite history. If he's going to torch the place, let's lock the door before he leaves.
Maybe. I think Richarlison will probably turn out to be a decent signing. I think he's been unlucky with injuries and I think he's been played out of position. I think Bissouma will ultimately turn out to be a good player. He had for many reasons when he struggled to get in and now he got injured. I think Perisic was a gamble, a free transfer gamble who just fell off a cliff. I think Longley, I don't know, man. I struggle to think you go from Guardiola and Bastoni to Longley. Even though Conte was perhaps happy with him and maybe he did want to sign him as a backup to Bastoni at Inter, maybe. But I don't think that's a huge drop off from two intended players that you were going to spend £50 million on to a £3 million loan. Yeah.
I mean, this Conte press conference was... I think you can tell that this was something out of the ordinary from the reaction of the journalists that were in it. It was like they were all flabbergasted by what had happened, by the level of like anger from Conte. And like I think a lot of it is performative, to be honest. I think Conte likes to lash out, doesn't he? To me, this came across as a man trying to save his own skin, a man trying to throw the players under the bus to save himself, to save his own reputation. He's not been at a club like Spurs before. He's not been anywhere where he's not had the tools to win the league. He's been at Chelsea, who'd won several titles in the years before he arrived. He's been at Inter, where they'd won several titles in the year before he arrived. He's been at Juventus, where they'd won several titles before he arrived. Like they're all starting from a much stronger base. He hadn't been at a club like Spurs, who... The best we've done is some consecutive top four finishes under Maurizio Pochettino. That's the best we've done in recent history. And for him to elevate us to title winning was always going to be challenging. And I think he finds it immensely frustrating that he has ultimately failed.
I think that there is a comparison with Inter in terms of current stature at the time. But then Inter went out and spent an enormous sum of money over a couple of windows. So, you know, that's how they compensated for that, basically. And this kind of comes back to the it's simultaneously true that, like, Conte has been backed with a large sum of money with players that he wanted, and true that we didn't go all the way to mega club spending that he's probably used to, right? This is the compromise between the two. And this is what we spoke about in January, right? In January, we said, or even before January, we said, you've got to make a decision, right? Are we a mega club who hire Antonio Conte and spend enormous sums every window, who just spend and spend and spend until every problem goes away on a continuous cycle of mass loss? Or are we in the financial tier below that, where we have to be smart, we have to buy young, we have to sell on, where we have to plan everything long term, and that we couldn't go into the rest of the season trying to balance between the two, that we shouldn't go into the rest of the season with a coach with 6 months left on his contract. But there's not much point continuing the season with Conte if we aren't going to bring in 2-3 players in the January window. And what we did is we didn't get an extension out of Conte, didn't get assurances out of Conte, bought him one player, one very expensive player who hasn't in time solved one problem in time for it to matter, because the season's already over. Now he's in the starting 11. It's this towing the line, and the thing that I think most people criticize Enoch and Levy for is for asking him to go in the direction that he has gone with this approach over the last few years, right? Hiring Mourinho, hiring Conte, spending a lot of money. And yes, we could have spent more. Yes, again, we haven't gone all the way, but look at how it has failed when we tried to do our impression of that. It's just, it's not what is appropriate for us. It's not where we are. The thing is that there is this other route that we can go. We can go for an upcoming manager. We can go for 5-year contracts and 5-year thinking. We can bring through younger players who require coaching. We can improve them. So I'm not writing off Spurs, as Conte has done. I'm not writing off Spurs because I think that there's so much promise in what we have built as a club. What Enoch, it's fair to say, have built into this club over a longer period of time, but they've stalled out because they have overthought their achievement.
I do think a lot of this, a lot of the Conte, a lot of the Jose stuff comes down to Harry Kane and the club's desperation to keep hold of Harry Kane. We've spoken a few times about Harry Kane, and I've mentioned a few times about I don't want to sell Harry Kane, but I'm not against a world in which we move him on and we change something. I think if we go for a manager, a different type of manager, then we have to accept that Kane is gone. And we have to, you can't play a high pressing line with Harry Kane. It's impossible. You can't play Kane deeper as a 10 and expect that midfield to press. So I think we either accept the fact that we're going to go for a project manager, younger, progressive. Not that I don't think Conte's a dinosaur, but you have to go for a progressive manager, just accept the fact that Kane is gone and Son will probably go as well unless we play him through the middle.
I think that probably has been significant, right? Bringing in big names to appease Kane so that he sticks around rather than biting the bullet and recognizing where we are. And there were reports that, you know, Kane's going to talk to the club about who the manager is going to be next before he signs an extension. And it's just like, we can't be falling into the same trap. It hasn't worked. Trying to appease Kane on the budget. And when I say budget, I mean globally an enormous budget. Globally, a horrifying quantity of money, right? To spend £200 million on the rights to contracts of football players over the course of the 18 months that Conte's been at the club, more than that even. It's absurd sums of money, but it's less than, you know, the 6 or 7 clubs, several of which are in our league, that they have to spend, right? We can't do that. We can't play that game. And if Kane thinks that means that he should move on, then we just have to make peace with that.
How do you feel about Ten Hag wanting to sign Kane and play in a side that does, to some degree, press? Does that make you rethink the theory that Kane can't play in a pressing team?
Well, he could be wrong. I think that United's recruitment under Ten Hag has been it's been very inefficient, right? So they have, it's fair to say, they're now a point ahead of us, right? But it's fair to say that Ten Hag's first season, taking over a very much struggling team, has been a success. They spent a huge sum of money, again, what we're talking about, mega club money, spent a huge sum of money, in my opinion, very inefficiently to get halfway to where he wants the team to be, right? So their recruitment has been good enough simply because they've spent absurd money. In terms of an efficiency for value, it's been very poor, in my opinion, right? So just because Man United think they want Harry Kane doesn't mean that they are right. However, I think that you can. I think that he is doesn't have the necessary intensity, but if the players are around him are playing a certain intensity, then he has an intelligence in his pressing that is enough, I believe.
I agree.
Yeah, I think if you put Casemiro behind most players, they look all right. The problem with Tottenham is we put Højbjerg behind Harry Kane and Højbjerg can't tackle anything.
I want to talk a lot more about this Conte press conference. But before we do, for 2023, we are partnered with Athletic Greens. So over to Bardi.
I started taking AG1 because my health is important to me. And I trust AG1. We are a team. They fight for me and show desire. This is the history of AG1 and Bardi. They have the responsibility, and I have the responsibility of taking AG1. Last season, they were good, and this season, they're good. They're always good. They always turn up. They never get knocked out by some other pills or shakes. When under pressure, they deliver all the nutrients and the ingredients, all in the shaker. They're never selfish, and there's way more than just 11 of them. They work for my body. They work as a team. I see this every day. No excuse. In my time, they've been the best. I've never seen better. No excuses. No hiding. AG1, get it done.
Bravo. Fucking bravo.
It's the history of AG1.
Passion. It also supports better sleep quality and recovery. And in 2020, AG donated over 1.2 million meals to kids. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/extrainch. Again, that is athleticgreens.com/extrainch to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So it wasn't just the players, in my opinion, that Antonio Conte went for. He went bigger than that. So he said they are used to it here. They're used to it. They don't play for something important. Yeah, they don't want to play under pressure. They don't want to play under stress. It's easy this way. Tottenham's story is this. 20 years, there is the owner and they never won something. But why? The fault is only for the club or for every manager that stay here. I have seen the managers that Tottenham had on the bench. You risk to disrupt the figure of the manager and to protect the other situation in every moment. Until now... Sorry, I'm not going to bother with that bit. He since claimed, apparently, in behind-the-scenes talks with the Spurs hierarchy, that he was only talking about the players. But I think it's obvious when he says, specifically, the owner. There is the owner. 20 years, there is the owner, and they never won something. But why? He's saying, isn't it obvious why they've never won anything? The owner. That's why they've never won anything. They've never backed the manager.
Well, I think there's some truth in this because there's the only constant at this club is Daniel Levy making the decisions. And I think it's fair enough. And I honestly believe that Daniel Levy should step aside and leave the footballing decisions to somebody else now and stop getting involved. And whoever appoints the next manager, it shouldn't be his choice. He's had enough managers now. And Conte's right, there's been some good people that have sat on our bench, Pochettino, Jose, AVB, even Redknapp, all capable managers, but something has always stopped them from achieving what we need. So I think it's a fair enough comment. Obviously, you don't say that about your employers. I don't sit there, I can't go on a rant against my manager and the people that employ me. It's all, you're always taking your life in your hands when you do that, and that's why he'll end up getting sacked. But I think it's a fair enough point, and I kind of enjoyed him airing that and being an almost kind of sparking the Enoch out movement. They needed something to get them unified, and Conte might have provided that. His legacy could be starting Enoch out and getting them properly organised.
So Kyle Findlay agrees with you. He says, I think it's entirely possible that Conte should go and every word he just said in the presser is correct. Thoughts?
I don't know if every word is correct. He's obviously self-preservation and he's saving himself in you know, as typical Conte way. But there's a hell of a lot of truth there.
I think he is essentially mischaracterizing our recent history, personally. I understand that we've not managed to get it over the line. That Daniel Levy has, since he took over at Spurs, seen an incredible upward trajectory for Spurs, which has stopped at fourth place. It's or third place or second place, but it's stopped. You know, he's got us so far. He's taken us from a perennial mid-table club who never did anything throughout my childhood. We won a League Cup. to like legitimately one of the biggest four or five teams in British football, who is self-sustaining and has an incredible revenue stream now, where we can go out and buy £50 million players in the transfer window. That, like, being able to compete with the top clubs was something that I could only dream of when I was younger. And I think Daniel Levy, from a sort of macro perspective, should be applauded for that. I agree that, like, you can zoom in on some of the decisions that Levy's made along the way and say there is mistake after mistake after mistake in that decision making. And I think it's very easy for us to say that in hindsight. But, you know, we complained that Pochettino wasn't backed, but at the time we were building a £1 billion stadium, so it's kind of obvious why he wasn't backed. And also, Pochettino turned down some very, in my opinion, good players that could have helped. So I don't think that's like a simple case of Pochettino wasn't backed. I think there's more nuance there. Mourinho, you know, sure, we could have backed him more, but there was the backdrop of COVID and the hit on revenue that had, and the fact that Mourinho's football absolutely sucked the life out of the fans, and it perhaps would have even been worse if fans had been allowed in stadiums. And then I think Conte has been backed, as we've said in this podcast, not to the degree that he would like, but I think he's been backed more than any manager has at Spurs, probably.
Yeah.
In the history of the club, in terms of being given a lot of money to spend on a lot of players. And also, let's not forget that he was allowed to just wipe out millions of pounds from the squad in terms of getting rid of Ndombele and Lo Celso, players that he didn't want around. The club allowed him to do that, allowed him to be ruthless, which was a big thing to allow a manager to do, particularly a manager that doesn't stick around long. I feel like Conte is rewriting history a little here. But I appreciate that his comments have resonated with a large amount of the fans, who are very frustrated at the ownership. I think there's a simplicity in a lot of it, in a lot of the In-Out Out movement. I think a lot of people just think purely in terms of spending. And I think that's why Bardi makes the point he has about that movement needing something to latch onto. Because if it's just that we haven't spent enough money, well, I personally think we will spend a lot of money over the next two or three years.
It's not about the money. It's about these managers that Levy has appointed. He's then are now being sacked. So he's picking these managers, or him and the guy that he hires to pick the manager. So it's his responsibility. He can't pass this down. Ends up with him. So we got Conte because he okayed it. We got Jose because he okayed it. We fired Pochettino because he okayed it. That's the problem. It's not so much the money. And the money is, the Premier League has just, I mean, Bournemouth is outspending every Serie A team. So there's
look
the
at
money
Nottingham Forest as well. I mean, there's the amount of money they've spent.
The money has come not through the stadium, but through the TV. Everything else is doesn't matter.
No. You look at the revenue streams, and our match day revenue is insane compared to other teams. Like, it elevates us to an extreme level in terms of our direct competitors.
But we're not seeing that being put.
I think we have started to see that, and I think we'll continue, because in the last two windows we spent handsome amounts of money and not recouped a great deal.
Yeah, but anyway, this is not my problem with Levy. Wasn't the transfers? It's his continual appointing of managers who then don't work, or he fires them, and that's the issue. And then we hear about Jed Spence. Jed Spence will probably turn into be a pretty good right wing back.
Yeah,
but he's not the right wing back that Antonio Conte wanted. And Danjuma may turn into be a pretty decent forward, but he's not the player that Antonio Conte wanted in January. And I think that's where the problem comes with. Like, he's not given that manager what he's required, what he's requested. He's not given Jose. I don't know. Maybe Jose wanted Matic. Who knows? He loves him, but he didn't give him those players. You know. So that's the thing that. It's not so much the money, it's the individuals.
I get it, but when you're spending £50 million a year in someone's wages, for them to then have such narrow requirements that you can only meet those very specific requirements and anything else is unacceptable, I just think that's ridiculous. On both sides, that is ridiculous.
I'm not defending Conte. I agree, he needs to be fired. But what I'm saying is that everybody's talking about the £15 million a year thing. I think his wages are not important in this. Otherwise, what? Schoenberg's on £100,000 a week and he can't pass forward. Because then otherwise, the money in football is so ridiculous that it's not even a talking point, surely. We chose to pay him that money. Daniel Levy signed off to pay him that much money. So that's on Daniel Levy for paying a manager that much.
But
you can't go to Conte like, oh, you should be doing better for £15 million. If he's getting paid 1.5 £4.5 million, he should be doing better than what he's doing. You see what I mean? The money's irrelevant at this point.
Conte's repeated selection of Pierre-Emile Højbjerg should be another nail in his coffin to you. Like,
for sure.
He loves Højbjerg. He loves him. He plays him every game.
Even though he's selfish and has no fire.
He has no fire. He just waves his arms around. I will back whatever manager we get next. If he boots out, if he gets rid of that guy, I'm all for him. He needs to go. Whoever we hire, just boot out Højbjerg. I'm yours for life. I will support you no matter what. I'll go down. Look how much I'm protecting a fucking Juventino pezzo di merda. If we get someone who boots out Højbjerg, I'm theirs. Don't even fucking like Conte.
So do we think that this is it for Conte? Has he gone too far this time? I feel like he is wanting to be sacked at this point.
Yeah, it feels like he's asking to be sacked. I am fucking outraged about what he said. I hate what he said. I don't think it's true. I think it's bollocks.
He said is worse than anything Mourinho has said about us ever.
Yeah, I agree.
And I hated Mourinho.
As a world-leaning Mourinho hater, I hate Conte more now, right?
Yeah, same.
I bear in mind, first of all, please, that I have reached this point in the podcast having previously laid a bunch of criticism for Levy and Enoch. Right? There are criticisms. There are plenty of criticisms to make. We make them increasingly regularly on this podcast. In my opinion, it's a matter of smartness, right? We can be smarter than other clubs. We can do things better. That's it. That's the only mentality is ability. This line of critique, no trophies, factually true. But also, fuck it. Why haven't Newcastle won any trophies? Why haven't Brighton won any trophies? Why haven't Brentford won any trophies? Why haven't Fulham won any trophies? Why haven't Aston Villa won any trophies? Why haven't Crystal Palace won any trophies? Wolverhampton, Leeds, Everton, Forest, West Ham, Bournemouth, Southampton. Don't get me started on the Championship, right? We're in the most hotly contested league in the world by a long way, right? There are four trophies we're eligible for. Two of them, as a club, we largely discount at the beginning of every season, right? And you can critique that specifically. You say, hey, this is the position we're in as a club. We're going to find it hard to push for league titles in the Champions League. Let's take a serious run in the Cup. That's not my personal perspective, but it's one I absolutely respect. If Conte feels that way, don't rotate the entire fucking team out for a Cup game that we need to win in order to get a trophy, right? So he's completely undermined his own criticism in that case, right? Why don't we win the league and the Champions League? Because we're completely up against it. Because Chelsea and City and now Newcastle and now Man United can spend huge, huge, huge sums again and again and fail and spend it again and fail and spend it again. We can outperform them on the pitch. It's possible. We can be smart enough. We can do it well enough. I believe we have the capacity. But with the sixth or seventh highest wage bill in the league, every time we finish above seventh, we're overperforming our financial reality, right? There's only two trophies. Seasons end once a year. We're talking about only a number of seasons where we've been in the run for either of those trophies. It's just not statistically likely that we would win one of them. I think that we can eventually. I think that we will eventually if we're smart enough, if we go about it smart enough. But this idea that if you're not one of essentially four teams in the world, you're shit, is such a bollocks way of talking and thinking about football. It's how our rivals talk about us. It is not acceptable for our coach to talk about us that way. And that's why he's got to be sacked.
I completely agree, Nathan. I completely agree. And I would add to that, that I've seen at least two articles by supposed like top level journalists who have questioned the club culture at Tottenham. I think organizational culture is a thing. I think mission, vision, values is a thing. I think in football, and especially on the football-facing side of things, it is bollocks. It is absolute bollocks. Club culture essentially means, is the team good? Yes, you have a good club culture. Is the team bad? Yes, you have a bad club culture. There's nothing more to it. If you hire a manager who's successful, you've got a good culture. If you hire a manager who's unsuccessful, you've got a bad culture. There's no such thing as a good club culture if you go from a good manager to a bad manager. A bad manager will undo any culture there is anyway.
I think
it's a nonsense.
You develop a winning mentality by winning football games, and you win football games by being good, right?
Absolutely, by having good players and a good manager.
I agree with you, but I do think there's certain things about certain clubs that they just have a mystique about them, and they're able just to get things over the line. Liverpool, one of those clubs. If Liverpool are in the final, you pretty much they don't win every single final, but you've got that feeling that they're going to do it. There's certain clubs that just
wasn't
that.
The case for years, and they've only achieved that by investing countless millions.
They were still winning. They were still winning UEFA Cups and FA Cups and League Cups in between under Hugh Houllier and under Souness and that kind of stuff. There is something about a club like Liverpool, but we're never going to arrive at that point. It takes generations and generations of winning competitions to have that stubbornness amongst the crowd and amongst everybody else that makes you think you're going to win. Is there an incorrect culture at Tottenham? Maybe. I agree that he rested the players against Sheffield United, and that's on him. But I do think Lucas, for all his faults, should be playing better against Sheffield United. I think Richarlison should be playing better against Sheffield United. I do think there's something in there that we don't prioritise, or is there's not enough of an incentive there for them to win this game. Losing to Sheffield United was pathetic. And that's on Conte, but it's also there's something wrong with the players there, man.
Well, I mean, I fundamentally think that essentially managers are told at Tottenham Hotspur that the biggest priority above everything year on year is finishing in the top four to be in the Champions League, because then you'll have more spending money for the next season when you can then try and go higher. So with that in mind, managers essentially bin off the League Cup and the FA Cup. Sadly, I mean, the FA Cup used to be a huge thing in English football. It's just not anymore. Teams in the Premier League constantly rotate for the FA Cup. And if a manager has that pressure on them from above, that the be-all and end-all is the top four, then of course they're going to rotate. And the problem with Conte's rotation is it's not proper rotation, essentially. You've got... we've spoken about it before, you've got an A team and a B team. And if you're in the B team and you've got no chance of making it into the A team, where's your motivation to try hard and do well? What motivation
is
has
that a culture? Is that a culture problem, though?
That's a culture that Conte has created in the team.
It was the same with Poch, and it was the same with Nuno, when Nuno took the second string team to whoever team that was in Holland, and they lost.
Yes, so, I think that is because of the club setting the priorities. I think Pochettino's rotation was better, but still not good. Mourinho's was better, but bad. Conte's is horrendous, absolutely horrendous. Why would Lucas or Pat Matasar or anyone think that playing well or trying really hard will end with him being in the first team when that has simply not happened under Antonio Conte? You can't play your way into his first choice 11. It doesn't happen. Unless there's an injury, it doesn't happen. You either get signed and you're in, or you're one of his favourites and you're in. That explains why Davis and Dyer, players that the fans are sick of, a lot of the fans are sick of, remain, and Højbjerg, remain big favourites to Conte. He has his core group of players that he uses no matter what, and you can't oust them.
In terms of mentality, right, we're talking about a club who, we're obviously with some changes in the squad now, not that long ago, made it to a Champions League final, right? Needed three goals in the Champions League semi-final. It doesn't get much.
And in the previous round, the comeback against Man City as well.
Well, again, also... a club who have more turnaround victories, more comeback victories in the Premier League than any other team, right? It's just it doesn't add up. Like, we win those games because we get, and with that, that's also true of like this season. The number of comebacks we've had this season, that those are mentality monsters, right? Comeback after comeback after comeback. It doesn't make sense to me. Like you said, you know, we're it's a matter of being good, and we can be good. We have that capacity as a club to be a good team who win games, and then suddenly we're mental warriors. We talked about style of play earlier, right? We talked about how we approach the Southampton game in terms of dropping off deep, letting them have the ball. If there is, through multiple squads or multiple half squads, a consistent sort of underlying mental facet to us as a club that we've seen why the low block and counter stopped working under Mourinho, why the low block and counter stopped working under Conte, is because we as a club are fundamentally, ideologically predisposed to be against low block and counter football. And if that's the case,
good.
Stop fucking playing it. Hire a manager who plays possession football.
Or then buy some midfielders who can do possession football. Yeah. Forwards. I'm kind of curious. When Conte's sacked, who comes in and what we do with our formation? That's really... I think the best thing for me personally is we all change it. We have something new to talk about. It'd be really nice. I'm really looking forward to having something to look forward to and something to ponder. It's always nice.
Do you know what? Like, I agree with everything Nathan said. The statistical chance of us winning a trophy is low. So that doesn't mean we shouldn't focus on winning a trophy. Mm. We should absolutely try and win a trophy. But the chance is low. So what can we do in the meantime? We can at least have some football that we enjoy watching. At least give us something to get behind, something to cheer, something to enjoy with our friends and family, something to make us feel good. I've seen so many teams play good football this season that I've been jealous of, and last season. And that's all I want. I want a good manager who will have us competing and have us in the top four, but I want them to do it playing a brand of football that I actually enjoy watching. And I don't think that's too much to ask for a club of our stature with our resources. I think you can have both. I think you can have, you know, regular top four finishes and a good style of football, an enjoyable style of football.
I just want to win games. I just want my perfect season of 38 1-0s.
I'll tell you one quote about the club that I did like this weekend, and that was Romero's Instagram post. I thought that was really like interesting in it being the antithesis of what Conte said. So this is what Romero said on Insta. He said, "There are many things to improve, but we will not get tired of trying. We will get up and try again. I love the players on my team. I love them and my club. I know we are going to move forward, and the time and work of everyone together will tell us where we will get to. I've been here for a short time, but we're going to be together to achieve important things." And then he put a white heart at the end of that post.
Selfish, desire, loser mentality, etc.
Maybe that would stop him getting sent off in 75 minutes in the Champions League game.
Ugh, Vardy, so cynical. I mean, that's what you want in a player, isn't it?
Yeah.
Someone who kind of seems to get it and actually buys into what we're trying to achieve here. I don't, like, maybe Romero's a mercenary and I'm just falling for some PR bullshit. But it feels real. That feels, and the way he plays, it seems real. He's a proper heart and sleeve player.
Mm.
And I think we've got a few of those in our squad. You know, I think Kane and Son have got a bit of that. I think Richarlison absolutely uses it. I think there's a lot to get behind for the future. I'm seeing the fact that Jed Spence played so well against Paris Saint-Germain this weekend and has created a lot of hype around him. I think that's really exciting. Udoji got man of the match, and I think he got an assist as well. I think he's really exciting. There's loads to be positive about for the future. We just need to get this prick out of our club and move on as soon as possible. And if that means Ryan Mason in charge for the rest of the season, then so be it. I'm here for that now. What do you think? What do you think we'll do? Do you think we'll appoint Mason? Do you think we'll have someone else lined up to step in?
I think it'll be Mason.
Sure. I don't care about this season. I don't think we're getting top four with or without Conte anymore. There was a brief period of time where it's like, oh, okay, we've got one game a week. See it out with Conte. Sure, maybe we'll get top four. I no longer think we will, with or without him. So I don't care. I don't care about this season. I'm trying to buy in to be excited about next season, thinking about prospective managers that we could be looking to hire. That's what I care about now. I don't care about this season. And I'm working on videos now, looking at the managers that I really like, that I think would be good for us coming out over the next few weeks. Probably going to have a free one up first for everyone. A little bit of a teaser.
Because see, Nathan's not as old as me. I'm just thinking that's another year gone, and I'm getting close to the end, and I've still not seen Spurs win the league.
You have been listening to The Extra Inch with me, Windy, my sidekick and best friend, Vardy, and our tactics guy, Nathan Aklar. If you like this, there's plenty more at patreon.com/TheExtraInch. Production is by Nathan A. Clark. Our logo, artwork and website are designed by Creighton Miller. Our music is by David Lindmer. You can find him on Instagram @David Lindmer. Do check him out. He's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us at podcast@theextrainch.co.uk. Subscribe, leave us a rating and a review. And most importantly, be sure to tell all of your Spurs friends. Shout out to the X-Subs, we love every single last one of you. And of course, come on you Spurs.